Hi there, I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is the Arts Alive podcast from the St. Pete Catalyst. We're here today to talk about the upcoming 56th season of the Florida Orchestra. Amazing. And my guest is music director and chief conductor, Michael Francis. Hello, sir.
Hi, Bill. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having us.
I always like to say it's sort of like having a conversation with James Bond. And I know you get this all the time, you know, because there's not a lot of erudite Englishmen in the Tampa Bay area that I get the chance to talk to. So it's always a pleasure.
Well, listen, if you're going to talk about James Bond, I'm going to get a very bad Sean Connery accent. So.
Yes, I was very bad, Michael.
Yes, I know. Much. I apologize. Apologies to all Scots in St. Pete for that appalling rendition.
Michael Francis is, I think, a native Londoner, and at one time you were a double bassist with the London Symphony Orchestra and has been musical director here since 2014.
Yes, I was announced. I started in 2015.
So eighth season now?
That's right. Eight seasons. I can't believe it.
You're coming up on, dare I say it, 10 years. Yes, it's right around the corner.
Absolutely, yeah.
I want to talk to you about so many things, but I do want to talk about your life and your family in Tampa Bay, because we know that you do so many other things too. The Mostly Mozart Festival in San Diego, you're still music director out there?
Yes, actually, that's mainly Mozart. Mostly Mozart's in New York. I do the mainly Mozart.
Mainly, mostly, mediumly,
everything. That's in San Diego, which is every June. That's a wonderful pleasure where all the concert masters and principal players of America come into one all-star orchestra. So that's a 2 or 3 week festival.
Talk to me about Germany. And I wondered why you didn't live in Ludwigshafen, Germany. Talk to me about the symphony over there and the work that you do in Germany as well.
Yeah, so I'm chief conductor of the Deutsche Staatsphilharmonie Rheinland-Pfalz, which is easy for me to say, which is near Mannheim. It's a place called Ludwigshafen. If anyone knows chemistry, BASF is the famous big chemistry. It's like this 5 kilometer city of pipes that is there. And it's just near Frankfurt. And
Blew my mind totally.
Yeah, it's really astonishing, this place. And I go there. And the Rheinland-Pfalz is the wine growing region of Germany. So it's a nice place to be.
Why don't you live there? Why do you live in Tampa Bay?
Well, because I love living in Tampa Bay. It works very well. My wife and daughter are happy. My daughter was born here, and I'm an American now. Can't you hear it?
When did you become a citizen?
That was December 2019, just before the pandemic.
I think it's safe to say, sir, that another reason you live here, we all love it here, you have built something significant in Tampa Bay with the work that you've done with TFO over the years. You must be very proud of it, because the changes have been immense and noticeable and quite happy.
Well, thanks, Bill. Yes, I feel very proud of what we are achieving. I say are because there's a long way to go yet. We have a lot more that we want to do. But yeah, so far, I mean, the orchestra growth is really fantastic. They're playing so well. And at the heart of every orchestra is, of course, the musicians. And we have an exceptional group of musicians who are passionate, committed, excited. We have a wonderful team, great staff. And we really care about communicating and representing our community in the right way. So really sharing the beauty of this wonderful music. And, you know, our audiences are growing, which is not everywhere in America. So we're up on last year, and I'm sure we're heading into a similar trajectory for next year.
I think one of the things that always impressed me was that kind of community outreach that you do. You know, you started doing those chamber shows at the Church of the Ascension. You go out and you do those Palladium shows. You go out and you play in the community. And you don't have to do that. That's important to you. Tell me why.
Well, if you believe in the power of music, then it has to be shared with everybody. And there should be no impediment to people having that, whether it be whether they can leave or they can travel, geographical, financial. Make sure you take it out there and then share the love. And that's really what it's about. And, you know, we have a huge metropolis here of nearly 3 million people. We want to reach everybody. Mm-hmm. And we want to make, of course, the best experience is people coming to hear full symphony orchestra in a concert hall.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we played at the Buck Stadium this year. We've done huge amounts of things. We are the orchestra of Tampa Bay. We're your orchestra. So we want to make sure we're reflecting what you want us to do. And at the same time, we are delighting and inspiring and bringing the music to you.
So if I have a pool party at my house, if I give you enough advance notice, can you send some guys over? And
Bill, if you're in Speedos, that's not happening.
No, that's definitely not happening.
I just want to clear that one up. All right.
Let's get that out of the way right away. We are here to talk about the upcoming 56th season, but the 55th season is still ongoing. You've got a month and a half to go yet before everybody takes a short, well-deserved short break. Let's talk about what's yet to come.
Well,
this year.
So next week we have, the week after, we have a fantastic little Soundwaves concert, which is the smaller arrangement of musicians and doing arrangements of big pieces. We have Bruckner Symphony No. 7, and that's going to be on the 21st and 22nd of April. And those are really beautiful concerts. It's extraordinary music. And of course, as always, we'll talk to you about it. So never feel intimidated. Never think, oh, I don't understand it. Don't worry. The Florida Orchestra cares enormously that we will help you to understand it and enjoy it. And then we have Mendelssohn's epic drama, Elijah, telling the Old Testament story of Elijah's battles with Jezebel and Baal and all these incredible things. It's such a powerful, dramatic piece with full choir, soloist, a true legend singing Elijah, Donny Ray Albert. And it's going to be an amazing concert. And we finish with the small feat of Wagner's Ring Without Words, which is a distillation of 16 hours of Wagner's epic ring cycle, which happens over four nights usually. Yeah. But this is now the best version, the orchestral highlights, the Reader's Digest version, just in over an hour, with all the Ride of the Valkyries, Siegfried's death. This is the most amazing journey through the entire ring cycle in just over an hour.
Have you conducted the whole ring cycle before?
No, I have not.
Four days, did you say?
It takes four nights.
Wow.
And the last one's about 6 hours.
When is that happening? That's May 20th, I see
May
on my
20th,
list
May here. 21st. And that is a piece that you don't want to miss. And we'll have of course, as we like to communicate up above us, on the screen, we'll have all the various scenes that we're going through so you can tell when he's fighting this, when he's, you know, when the... when the twins are coming together.
Are there vocalists as well? I mean, is this...
This is just all the orchestral.
Just the orchestral bits.
Yeah, no singing. So you're just your own imagination. But it's the sounds that he makes are absolutely worth hearing. Anvils being hammered. There's enormous brass instruments everywhere. There's just a huge... It's the biggest orchestra we've had this year by far.
Oh, wow.
And it's just one of those great sonic experiences.
You know what I can see? I'm going to make a prediction that when I write about this piece, when it comes up, I'm going to refer to you as Lord of the Rings. Okay? I got him to laugh, folks.
That's right. That's it. As long as I'm Aragorn and not one of those ugly ring wraiths or something.
I can't think of any of the names right now, but I will. It'll come to me later.
I'm not Frodo, just clear that one up. Or Gollum.
you're too tall to be Frodo. Let's talk about Inside the Music. You were talking about explaining things to people. And this is a program that you do often, and it's going to carry on into the next season, where you literally go inside the music for people, you know, at separate performances. I know you do talks before the concerts. Tell me about these things, why you do them, and what the intended effect is.
You know, we have this most amazing 300, 400, 500 years of music to share. And the most amazing thing is that human condition hasn't changed. Yes, we have different challenges today, but we're all basically dealing with the same stuff that they were dealing with in Shakespeare's time. So this music shares all these wonderful qualities for all of us. And I want to make sure that everybody has a chance to really connect it to their own lives personally. So in these conversations that we do, sometimes we will do, like the Wagner, it'll be a rehearsal. So we're all in our relaxed clothing, and I'll stop at various points, tell you what's coming up, what's going on in the music, and continue through. Sometimes I'll do a full presentation, and then with live musical examples from the orchestra, take a break, have a cup of tea, come back and perform it. So the thing is that anybody, no matter what your listening level is, whether you have heard this piece 20 times or you've never even heard of the composer, if you come to an Inside the Music, I feel pretty sure you're going to be able to relate to the music and have an extraordinary experience. It's like it's sort of like the museum earpiece when you go to look at the paintings and telling what's going on steroids. And we have fun. It's not stuffy.
Yeah.
It's relaxed. And I'm not going to tell you all the various harmonies. You don't have to know those things. But I will tell you what the composer went through, because you've all been through love and death and life and all this wonderful complication that we share.
Do people tell you that they appreciate this? I mean, obviously when you run into folks, you know, hey, it's Michael Francis. Let me tell you that Inside the Music, when you explain that Tchaikovsky bit to me, now I got it. Do you hear that?
I hear that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people really feel now much deeper connections to it. I mean, our pre-concert talks, in most orchestras, you're lucky to get 20, 30 people. We're getting 600, 700 sometimes in the Mahaffey Theatre. It's amazing because there's a hunger to understand this incredible art form. Because once you do, if you have intellectual understanding, you have personal emotional experience, generally.
I would say that's true. And, you know, the analogy I always give, and it's a very simple sort of primitive one, is that I feel it in my chest, you know, and then it just reverberates throughout my body. And there is nothing like being in the concert hall.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like sort of putting on a record and go, oh, that's nice, you know,
yeah.
Which is nice. Put the CD in the car or whatever. But going to the Mahaffey Theater or to Morsani Hall in the Strassen or to Ruth Eckert Hall, the various other places you play, that's the ticket
Okay. And one of the reasons why is that you're watching risk. You're watching people take incredible risks within microseconds. And of course, you know, that's like an edifice that is sometimes teetering on stilettos. It could fall off at any point on a high wire.
I don't know that people want to know that.
But it's true. And so that's why we practice so hard, is that, you know, you're watching things happen that have never happened before. Music requires other people to bring it to life. And that's why it's such an incredible experience. And you turn your phone off. Hopefully.
Yeah, right.
So that's, you know, if you're listening to a recording, most people are checking what's on Netflix at the same time. So when you come to a concert, you're not. You're just listening.
You're engaged. You're enveloped. Let's go ahead and talk about the upcoming season. First of all, I wanted to ask, I mean, how you approach curating a new season. I mean, is it sort of, well, you know, we haven't played Eroica in a long time. Or is it more like, I think people need to experience this or that, sort of like, you know, feeding them their musical vegetables. What's the process like?
It's a very complicated one that takes a long time. So there is a timeline thing where you don't want to bring pieces back too often.
But right.
For me, I'm always looking for the centerpiece or the hook of the season. And what I found important this year is that Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue is going to be 100 years old. And we're performing it almost exactly 100 years since it was first performed. And that piece really completely transformed the American musical language, because it combined jazz. Uh-huh. It combined this brand new art form with orchestras and symphonic. And it changed really the entire understanding of the potential of jazz into this, you know, think of West Side Story since then and all of this music. And that particular concert works backwards with and a composer who's alive today, Winter Marsalis, the great jazz trumpeter,
right,
working backwards to show the influence, finishing with Rhapsody in Blue. And then so around that, I wanted to look at, well, what is the American musical language? We have a concert with Jubilant Sykes singing the old American songs and the spirituals, showing where there's the musical roots in our second concert. That's going to be paired with Appalachian Spring by Copeland. So there's this real in-depth and I think really inspiring journey through what makes the American music what it is today.
So in other words, you found a theme and let's do a thread there. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of Beethoven and Elgar and you know, another Dvorak and, you know, the usual suspects, if you will. I say that with all respect, but it's not all American composers.
Well, no, if you look at, for example, Beethoven's Eroica Symphony, we've paired that with John Adams, who was one of the great living American composers.
Also and, a president, I think. Wasn't he a president?
Yes, and good with numbers. And then Shostakovich as well. So that's a concert based upon the effect of politics on music.
Ah.
So that's what connects that one. And we always want to provide a balanced diet. So we want a bit of everything for everybody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, to introduce you to new pieces, give you your beloved favorites. And this year, give you some surprises, because every concert's going to have a mystery piece.
I heard that. Somebody told me about that. What does that mean? Give us a secret. Is that, oh, we're going to play like a Britney Spears hit in the middle of all this? Or, that'd be a real mystery.
I don't think I know any of her songs.
No, well,
and even I did, I'm not sure I'm going to go there.
You don't really need to. I think. Yeah.
This one is, so every concert has a piece of music around 5, 6, 7 minutes long, which is going to be a surprise. So, and this connected, we've already planned them, of course. And these are pieces to make you smile, to help maybe deepen the program connections. And they're going to sometimes to surprise you and sometimes to shock you, but in a good way. But they're always going to be things that are just our way of just breaking down the formality of concerts. So it gives us a chance to introduce something new to you and helping that feel more like a personally curated concert.
Is launching every season to you like Christmas morning? I can't wait till these folks open these presents and see what we've got for them. I mean, you sort of lie in anticipation for, I can't wait for them to see what's coming.
Every concert I'm always thinking how this will impact people in the audience, always. So for me, the reason I'm a conductor is that my job is to facilitate this incredible music to come through these wonderful musicians to play it the best for one reason, so that it transforms the lives and souls of the people behind me in the audience. That's what I'm after. And so each of these programs will challenge, joy, encourage, enrich, edify, whatever you want it to do, educate and just entertain you in different ways. And so if you came to every single one of these concerts, every night you would have an incredible experience.
You're opening September 30th and October 1st with The Planets from Gustav Holst, which to me is, I'm there.
Yeah.
How cool is that? How often is that performed anymore? I just remember the old Tomita record, you know, the electronics and all of that. But this is an incredible piece of work.
Oh, it's a masterpiece. And, yeah. You know, and this piece influenced American musical language so much because John Williams, you think of all the music that came out of that style. And we paired it with Christopher Theofanidis' drum circles, which is four percussionists whacking things in on stage beforehand, which is this amazingly brilliant, vibrant piece of music. And then we go into The Planets, which, of course, is one of the great spectacles with Mars, with Jupiter, with all of them coming out, the great personalities. It's one of those pieces, if you've never heard the Planets, you have to come. If you have heard it, you have to hear how well we play it now.
When you talked about the drum circles, the first thing I thought of people whacking things on stage, the first thing I thought of was it's almost like having a warm-up act, you know, to put the audience in this particular mood of percussive things coming from different places. Is that what it's like? Is it sort of like having the stand-up comedian come out and warm up the audience before you tape a sitcom just to get them in the right place?
Well, I think sometimes people may think that, but when you see and hear this is a piece to be seen. You watch these people playing with such incredible coordination and this fantastically vibrant music, you realize actually that will often be the highlight for many people, that comp bit. So although it looks like it's an introduction, I think it's going to have a very, very different effect when you see and hear it live.
The second show, I don't know if it's the second show, I may be out of sequence, but I didn't know it probably is out of sequence. Let's go to the Copland piece, the Appalachian Spring. I want to tell me about Jubilant Sykes, because to me, I don't know who this person is. I think of Paul Robeson doing spirituals. This is October 21st and 22nd.
Yeah, Jubilant Sykes has really passionately continued that wonderful that connection, that chain, right back to when the spirituals are written, and really making sure that people have this great connection to it today. He's releasing albums which are having tremendous success, singing these songs. And when we think of the American musical language, it was Dvorak who said to everybody in America, well, what are you doing? Just go to these spirituals. This is your folk music. This is your heritage. And of course, out of that came jazz. Out of that came the New World Symphony, which we have later in the year.
Yeah.
So we took an outsider like Dvorak to point out to the Americans what our language is. And this is going to be an incredibly beautiful concert.
When you do the Rhapsody in Blue concert, which is February 17th and 18th, I wanted to say, too, that Rhapsody in Blue, for me, not being a classical music person, as we've discussed, was a gateway. It was a gateway drug for me. And it was Michael Tilson Thomas conducting for the Woody Allen film called Manhattan. You know, that fit so beautifully. And I remember I bought the album and I learned Rhapsody in Blue. I was about 20 years old. And it was like, this is beautiful music. So thank you. And that's certainly one I'm getting tickets for. So we'll talk about that.
That concert will show you everything that came out from that piece.
I did want to talk to you about the Marsalis piece on that program. Tell me about it. I mean, why pair it with Gershwin, with Rhapsody in Blue?
Well, because I think he is an exact product of the merging of classical and jazz that really started with Gershwin.
Well, duh, Bill. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, so he's to continue them. He wrote the Tuba Concerto we performed this year. He's a brilliant classical composer, as well as, of course, a fantastic world-class jazz musician. So this really is the most modern incarnation of that wonderful Gershwin world.
And some pieces from On the Town by Bernstein.
Yes, and before that, Mason Bates's Alternative Energy, which has live sort of drum beats, and it's techno in it. It has people hitting bits of car. It is this bluegrass. He really just throws all of the American language into this wonderful melting pot.
This is the concert right here.
It's unbelievable. It's going to be an incredible spectacle. And then finishing Rhapsody in Blue, and we have our own Natalie Ho will be playing the Ebony Concerto, which is Stravinsky's attempt at jazz, which is really fun. And again, remember, there's going to be a mystery piece as well.
Oh, yeah. That's maybe Willie Nelson did a whole recording with Wynton Marsalis, so God knows what that'll be.
Yeah.
I'm looking at highlights here, but I want to talk with you about highlights for yourself, things you want to focus on talking about, telling the folks about?
So I think the final piece in the year is something really that shouldn't be missed. Mahler's great symphony number 2, the Resurrection Symphony. This is, if you haven't seen this piece live, this is one of the most extraordinary experiences, because the full choir, the full orchestra, organ, soloist, everything at full power at the end. It is sort of one of the greatest works of arts of all. So that really has to be heard. We're really delighted to have Jonathan Hayward, who's the new music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, coming to conduct a concert with us. And we have great guest artists, as always. We have Richard Strauss's Ein Heldenleben, which is a hero's life, which is the most megalomaniac piece of music ever written. Basically, illustrates.
I thought you were going to say Wagner was.
That's this season.
Okay.
So we have that. We have Sanson's Organ Symphony. We have Jeffrey Multer, our concertmaster, and Yoni Drelbait, our new principal cello, performing Brahms' Double Concerto. And we just have an incredible variety. I mean, the Michael Doherty Metropolis Symphony. This is a piece based about comics and Superman. This is, you know, our idea of the Tampa Bay Metropolis is perfectly encapsulated there. So the American musical language is so rich, but alongside that, incredible stars, wonderful guest artists, great conductors. It's a really good season, if I may say so.
Season tickets are available now, and it's floridaorchestra.org. And I think I heard through the grapevine somewhere in July, individual concert tickets go on. So is this season on the website now? I know it's on the St. Pete Catalyst site. Yes, it's on the website now. I'm getting a thumbs up from across the room. Before I let you go, let's talk very quickly about the Pop series. Because basically you have like a Cirque troupe coming and swinging from the rafters. And
we do.
And
we have that.
This gets more interesting every year.
We have so many great things. We have Hollywood's Golden Age. We have... of course, with Broadway, with Love, Disco Fever will be a blast.
That's why.
There is that great celebration around the same time of our Gershwin, you know, the Gershwin celebration. So, you know, the orchestra really represents such an enormous variety of styles. So even if you think, well, maybe I'm not sure about that concert, we're going to have something amazing for you. And we have our coffee series, we have our rock concerts, we do films. I mean, we really do everything. So this is, this is your orchestra.
Can we talk about Mark for a second? I mean, he's unfortunately saying goodbye this year, your executive director, Mark Cantrell. Amazing guy. I've gotten to know Mark a little bit over the years. He's pulling out and moving on to other things in his life. But, I mean, is the search ongoing? Is there anything you can say about who will replace him?
Yeah, well, firstly, I would say thank you to Mark Cantrell. He's been here for 4 years and was, of course, during those very, very critical period in COVID.
Yeah.
Showed great leadership when we were able to do more concerts than any orchestra in North America.
That was a hell of a period. May I say that? I was here covering that between you and Mark, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, so we really did something extraordinary and safely. So he was instrumental in that, and he was doing wonderful work. But I think the call of the mountains, he wanted to head up there. He's always wanted to live in Colorado, so this opportunity came at a time for him that it's a shame for us. I'd love to have continued working with Mark, but he did wonderful work and we're grateful.
Mark had done with the Iditarod or something. He's like a sled dog guy.
Yes, he's and a pilot and a carpenter and all sorts. He's quite the Renaissance man. But yeah, the search is ongoing. We're very pleased already to see some outstanding candidates. And we will absolutely be in a great position by beginning of next season to have somebody in place. So there's nothing to be concerned about. We are well set and our future looks very good.
I'm surprised he stayed for 4 years. He's got so many irons in the fire. And he's a bassoonist or a clarinetist?
No, much worse, bass trombone.
That explains a lot. Yeah. Anyway, so before we say goodbye, which we're about to do, your contract is coming up in another year or two. As far as you know, you're going to stick around. You enjoy being here. You're a citizen.
I'm very happy here, and I really want to continue the great work that we've done and to build something truly remarkable, because I look at Tampa Bay, I look at all the statistics, everything points to this being the most extraordinary, fast-growing place in America.
Isn't that amazing?
And so I didn't mean to, but I built a station where all the trains are heading, so I would be a fool to want to leave when we have a chance of building something absolutely remarkable for this generation and generations to come.
Well, we certainly wish you all the best with the end of this season. You'll be in San Diego over the summer, right?
So I don't
really rest.
No, I know. After the season, I go. I have usually another month and a half of work, but then I do rest. I do rest for about 6 weeks. Yeah,
6 weeks, and then you're going to hit it. Hit it from all sides coming
back.
Michael Francis from the Florida Orchestra. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Bill.